Hey, welcome to Life 2.0 podcast. I am John St. Augustine. Glad to have you, you, and you over there, and you joining me from anywhere and everywhere on planet Earth. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Hey, glad to have you joining me. As I said, just, you know, I woke up this, it's early here in Chicago. Let's get right to it, shall we? It's really early here in Chicago, like 6 o'clock in the morning. It was a raining evening and went to bed kind of early, had a great night's sleep. But I woke up and the first thing I thought of was, what am I going to talk about on the Life 2.0 podcast? Literally laying in bed in the dark, thinking about what I could possibly pass along that would have value to the people that listen to this show and myself, quite frankly, for doing it. And I've always maintained that I would never do this podcast just to fill time. I used to fill time when I was doing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for like 8 or 9 or 10 years. And that's some serious filling of time. I remember when I was on WGN for a couple years from 2011 to 2013 and a half, somewhere in there, had the opportunity to be a pinch hitter, we call it in the business, where I was on staff and I would sit in on different shifts depending on who was taking time off or wherever I was needed. And of course, back then, my thought was, you know, I'm headed towards the big seat at some point. So that never actually happened long term, but I had a great experience at WGN. And most places I've been on the radio, I've had some great experiences. You know, run into idiots and smart people all over, no matter what your career is. So I've had a little bit of both. But that time at WGN was really, really special. As a Chicago kid, I grew up listening to WGN like most people did back in the day. And, you know, things have changed, a lot more stations, things like that. But back in the day, it was the king. And to have the opportunity to go there and spend time on the air was didn't matter if I was on, you know, 5 hours a week or 50 hours. I was good with both. And when you're doing a long-term show, or I should say a long-form show, for example, I would sit in sometimes from 9 o'clock in the morning till noon. And the hour is broken down into commercial segments and the news. So it's not really a full hour. It's maybe 50 minutes, 48 minutes somewhere of content. And you got to work around all the clocks and things like that. So it was a great thing. But that's long form and a lot of fodder, as I call it. I have to fill that time. And it's live radio. You know, there's no room for errors and you can't drop F-bombs and things like that. I could never say shit on WGN. I could say shit here because it's not FCC regulated. I could say shit I could do the shit show and just say shit for 40 minutes. Sometimes I do. You just never get the chance to hear that tape. But it was such a great thing to learn how to do that. And I started in radio live, right? So I started with 3 hours a week. Actually, it was an hour a week, and then I had 5 weeks to get it right, and then it went to 2 hours a week, and it kind of built out. So starting in live radio has prepared me many, many, many times over to do this work, which is taped, but I tape it on the same day that I launch it, or drop the podcast, as we call it. And the reason I do this is because I don't want to get too far ahead. As a matter of fact, in full disclosure, there's been times when I've taped this show too far ahead, something changes that I wanted to talk about, I have to go back in and fix it. And while this show is not bent really on a time frame, meaning I don't really time the shows out, like to have 48 minutes of content and work around clocks, I still try to keep it within 35 to 40 minutes because, God, I get tired of hearing myself talk after a while. I can't imagine how you feel. But today I woke up with this thought of what can I bring to the table? Look, you know, I always talk about staying out of the headlines and staying focused on the lifelines. That doesn't mean you ignore the headlines, just doesn't mean you get swallowed up by them. And of course, the headlines are full of what's going on in the Ukraine and other things that are going on in the world. And, you know, there's a domino effect when this type of stuff happens. As soon as Russia invades the Ukraine, next thing you know, Poland's on alert and China wants to possibly get behind the Soviet Union to do this. And it becomes a ripple effect. And that is a natural occurrence in every single thing we do. Even this little show that I do now, far different than when I was on Oprah Radio with 3 million people listening to me, or even on WGN with about 1 million people listening. everything emanates out, and there's a ripple effect to the words I say or to the information that I offer, and then what you do or don't do with it. You know, most people, I guess, would listen to this, and then they click it off, and that's it. Or maybe there's something that sticks with them, and they can apply it in their life. So the ripple effect is a natural occurrence. I like to think of the concentric rings. You know, if you go to a pond, a still pond, or a lake, some smaller body of water, or even a big one, and you throw a stone in or a large rock, you'll see those concentric rings spread out. And we only notice them at the surface level. So that's what we can see at the surface. Throw a stone in and there it goes. And you see those rings slowly ripple out, those concentric rings. The fact of the matter is they're not only on the surface, but they're down all the way in the lower levels of the water. We just see what's on top. And that's what the headlines are for me. We only see the ripples and the concentric rings at the surface of things. We rarely have the opportunity to go below the surface and look underneath and see what kind of actions are being taken at the lower levels, for lack of a better term. So while the headlines are full of the shit, there's no question of that. Again, a reminder that pretty much the headlines are always full of shit. Our only job, at least as I see it, is how do we respond to the shit? Either we create more shit or we clean it up. And while there is no question that we have zero control, at least I'll just use myself as an example. If I had the wherewithal to end the war in Ukraine, I'd have done it already. I don't. There's been times I thought, well, how do I get over to see Mr. Putin and have a little face-to-face bag of knuckles conversation? But that's not something that's going to happen anytime soon. But it is my reaction to what's going on. But my response has become different. And my response is to remind myself that this is part of what we do as humans, unfortunately. It always takes one to piss off people and ruin a party, doesn't it? Like, there's always one guy that's doing this stuff. And you never notice it's never one woman that does it. It's always a guy. It's some guy who's got some sort of complex or problem. You know, I know Putin's like 5'5". He's probably got this small guy thing going on. He was picked on when he was a kid. He was abused. He was this, he's that. So he rises to power. And now he's going to make everybody pay. Yeah, whatever. You could look down the list. Hitler, same thing, right? Guy had one testicle. How do you take a guy with one testicle seriously? Well, he's got to start a war. So I'm looking at, these are generalizations. Don't email me with any factual change. I'm just saying, I have to look at these things in order to be able to respond to them so it doesn't eat me up. And I look at this stuff and go, my first thought was, quite frankly, and I just before I turned the microphone on, I had this thought. Putin wasn't born this way. He was made this way. Whatever twists and bends in his life that put him in this position were probably many, or just a few big ones. And you look at the history of people that do this, that create so much chaos in the world, and there's always somebody who is stirring the pot because they felt something was, you know, was they did them wrong. And I can't control that. And this is what happens. And so that's why I think it's important when I mentioned about the concentric rings and the ripple effect of how we treat people. You know, Wayne Dyer said it. How people treat you is their karma. They'll have to pay for that. How you respond is your karma, and you'll have to pay for that. And so whatever's coming for Mr. Putin has already been put in place. I don't know what that's going to be. But if you look through history, while these things have started, they've also ended. They've also ended. And they're never good. So it is like this self-fulfilling prophecy when we're in the midst of this chaos to be able to pull back and be a little objective about it. And it's hard. It is difficult. You know, I watched the documentary yesterday. I tend to watch these documentaries the older I get. You know, I love watching the Marvel movies and Batman. I mean, that's all well and good. I get a kick out of that stuff. But it doesn't help me really deal with reality, only escape it. So when I look at documentaries on what's gone on in our past, in the world, or just here in the States, it once again is a reminder, it's a bookmark of sorts. It's something that tells me that we've been through these things before. They just look different, and they were at a different time. And they will come and go as we are humans. This is what we do. It's unfortunate. And I think maybe that's the big disappointment, right? You'd think in the 21st century, with all the technology at our fingertips, we'd be better off at being good to each other. You'd think that, but they probably thought that in 1966 when Vietnam was raging, and they probably thought that, you know, back in 1863 when the Civil War was going on, and, you know, you just take a look at all these, World War II, you name it. It should be different than it is, and it's not, and that's where the difficulty lies. Expectation and reality rarely line up. You expect people to act a certain way and they don't, and then there's a problem. And for the most part, most of us in the world would never do things like these dictators do and these tyrants do. We just wouldn't. We're not built that way. Whatever difficulties I've had in my personal life, my mom was an alcoholic. My dad enabled her to be that alcoholic. And for a very long time, I took that on myself as if somehow I was the cause of that. If I hadn't worked myself out of that, I'd have been going through the rest of my life either being an alcoholic or causing pain to other people in order to fulfill that prophecy. But I worked my way out of that stuff. I saw it eventually as this is not my problem. I didn't create it. I have to learn how to respond to it. And I did. It took a long time. And part of me working out of it is doing things like I'm doing right now. Is to remind myself that what has come out of this difficulty that I lived with growing up is my insistence that things can change. That you can come out of that hole. My old buddy Jerry Kramer says it all the time. Johnny, the best way to get out of the hole is to quit digging it. I think Will Rogers said it first, but Jerry's voice is a little bit better than Mr. Rogers. Not the guy on television. So this is my attempt every day, or at least every time I do this show, and every day, but that's off the air, to undo what's been done. As I say, to go up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. It's all there. It's absurd the way these things are today, but if the obvious causes are there, and we get swallowed up by them, and it gets old, and it wears us out. We just come out of a pandemic, millions of people died. You can start this shit now? You couldn't script it any better or worse. So my attempt this morning, working without a net, by the way, is to offset that erosion, if at all possible. And I'm promoting, they don't even know I'm doing this. There's a site that I always go to called goodnewsnetwork.org. And I have referenced them over the years in all the work that I do on the radio for one simple reason, because they highlight all the good that's going on in the world. It does not ignore the bad that's going on in the world, but this is a counterbalance, a counterweight to all that shit that we're bombarded with. I think that's another piece of this before I move on. That documentary I watched yesterday, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, was about President Kennedy and Governor George Wallace when it came down to integrating students in Alabama, integrating into the school, college there. And it was only about an hour long. It was such a telling retrospective of how things were back then. This was in 1962. I was, 5 years old, so none of this was in my line of vision. And I think that's a huge part of all this, which I'll come back to in a second. What's in our line of sight, I think, plays a big role in how we move in the world. So in 1962, of course, it was landmark stuff that the racial integration of University of Alabama, Governor George Wallace earned national notoriety by standing in front of the entrance of the University of Alabama, blocking the path of black students. And conversely, the law had already been passed by the federal court that they were allowed in. So here we have one of the earlier loggerheads between what a federal court had decided and a state wanted to do. And being a state, he's the governor, so he's elected official and he's representing the state. And this whole documentary was behind the scenes and how they were going to approach getting these students into the University of Alabama, as the governor was going to block the door. He's going to stand there and block the door. And it was a bit of a fascinating look behind the scenes. You had JFK, who, only had about a year to live at that point. Bobby Kennedy, who was the attorney general, his brother, advising him. And first of all, everybody smokes except the president and Bobby Kennedy. Everybody in the White House, all the aides, they smoke like fiends. How these guys didn't die of cancer, I don't know. Maybe they did. But This went on and told this whole story, and it showed from both sides. It showed JFK's position, which was backed by the court. It showed RFK as the attorney general seeking to implement that order. It showed RFK's staff talking with him about how best to go about it. It showed George Wallace in his moral righteousness, what he felt was right. And it's not hard to see when you look at this all these years later to see, well, they're both kind of doing the same thing, meaning on the president's side and the federal court side and RFK's side, they felt there was a moral obligation to, you know, integrate the schools. And I believe at that point, Alabama was the last holdout of segregation. That was the last place it was, you know, was not allowed. And on Governor Wallace's side, he went on and on about how this was a moral issue and he didn't have a problem with it. And this was what was right. So you see two people who think they're right. And when you look at it, who stuck in the middle were these two black students who just wanted an education. So, of course, if you study history, you know how this turns out. They were eventually admitted. But there was some juxtaposition there. And at one point, Governor Wallace finally just stepped. He just left. He stepped aside, and that was it. And the young woman went in, and she started her classes. And a day later, I believe it was, the young man went in, nothing, no problems, just walked indoor and started classes. Interesting to me, so after that, they start talking about, you know, on both sides, on RFK's side, JFK's side, they said, well, you know, the court order has just been upheld, and that's the end of it, and fine. And for Governor Wallace, he felt he had made his moral stance well known, and that in the coming years, the South will rise again, basically. Here's what's most interesting to me. First of all, George Wallace ran for president, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times. The last time was, I think, in 1976. He ran as a Democrat, which is interesting. But eventually he announced in the later 1970s, he became a born-again Christian. And he changed his views on race. He renounced his past support for segregation. He called black leaders and asked them for forgiveness. He totally changed his tune. Now, I don't know why he did or didn't. I can't say it's valid or not. If he found the Almighty and the Almighty said, George, you need to get your shit together, and that happened, fantastic. If it was a political thing, we'll never know because he never had office again. He was actually shot at one point running for president by a guy named Arthur Bremer. He's paralyzed from the waist down. But that whole, what came to me, and I'm bringing this full around to the headlines, hopefully, is that you could have skipped all that bullshit, right? Did we have to go through all that? I'm standing in the doorway. You can't come in. I'm the cause. You know, I'm going to uphold this. And everywhere he went in that documentary, the people of Alabama sought him out, shook his hand. Governor, we're with you. You know, this is how it's supposed to be here. This is only 100 years after, not even, it was like 98 years after the Civil War ended. 98 years. So that stuff was still deep and arguably still deep today. We don't change very quick. And at one point, I found it, you know, I said the obvious buried in the absurd. At one point, they're interviewing George Wallace in his home, right outside of his governor's mansion, I should say, in Alabama. And there's a woman, black woman, who is holding his daughter, who's white, and she'll be watching her all day, and he bids her goodbye and, you know, talk to you soon, almost like he'd be talking to his wife or sister, to this black woman, or the nanny or the maid. And he gets outside 20 feet later, and he says, listen, colored people need to know their place, and they know what their place is here, and if we just stay apart, we're okay. I'm thinking, we're talking to the nanny who's black, who's holding your daughter who's white, who probably worked for him for 20 years, and she's like part of the family. It's all obvious to me, sometimes buried in these deep absurdities. And the reason I bring this up is because history is so important. You know, when I was in high school, I loved history class. I loved learning things about where we've come. And to deny what our history is in any way, shape, or form diminishes the fact that we're even here, in my opinion. So the final piece of that was, and I turned this documentary off, and I thought, man, the big takeaway, in my opinion, is that that decision, along with a couple others, sealed John F. Kennedy's fate and Robert Kennedy's fate. Their death warrants were signed when they made that decision. It took a while, you know, 1963 for President Kennedy and 1968 for RFK, but they were able to put themselves in that line of fire, and I can't even think that they didn't know that. They knew there's a sight on their back. At one point, there was deep concern in this country. What would happen if a Roman Catholic, John F. Kennedy, became president? Oh, my God. Really? So while we have great advances in technology, as the great Buckminster Fuller said, it's obvious our technology is surpassing our humanity. And that's on display all the time, is it not, when it comes to these headlines? But back to the Good News Network, as promised. I've been following these folks for 5, 6, 7 years. And just you look at the difference between what they do here at the Good News Network and any other CNN, Fox, MSNBC, it doesn't matter. What a vast difference. There is none of what's going on in the world in a difficult fashion on their page. Again, it's goodnewsnetwork.org. And when I scroll down, I'm just going to read some of these headlines. I'm not going to go into each one of these stories. But researchers make a giant leap forward to produce affordable, renewable hydrogen. As gas prices go through the roof, I could have done a whole podcast on how gas prices work, why the president's not in charge, and how the supply chain works. But would that alleviate any suffering for people? Probably not. Knowing it doesn't mean you're going to do it. It just means you know it. Strangers are leaving strollers and diapers and toys at the border for Ukrainian refugees' moms. For all the moms that are there, just put whatever you need, they're just putting it there. There's a video game that just came out. I am not a fan, but there is one that came out that is really effective for stroke therapy, as much as if it would be an in-person rehab. So the video game technology is being used for that. There was an endangered baby rhino born in a Czech zoo during the middle of all this. A tiny marine microbe could turn out to be a secret weapon in the battle against climate change. Carbon-negative plant opened in Turkey, turning algae into biojet fuel. You imagine turning algae into biojet fuel? Now listen, I haven't done one of the Earth Matters segments with Bill Curtis in a very, very long time. It was a 3-year series I worked on with BK, syndicated around the country, put a lot of time, energy, and effort in it. We did 300 episodes. And I've gotten away from that a little bit, been busy with other things. There's 300 of these things sitting in my audio vault. But I caution when we start saying, well, we can like turn algae into biojet fuel. That's great. But algae is one of the main sustaining building blocks of life in the oceans and the seas of the world. You got to be careful what we do with this stuff because, again, it's about the ripple effect. Breeding ground for sea turtles. The green sea turtle reports a 500% boom in the number of eggs being laid. You know, when the pandemic was in full swing and everybody stopped driving, and when the same fuel was like $1 a barrel or they had to give it away in the last year and a half, you remember those days? Gas was $2 a gallon. Everybody was happy because nobody was driving. It's called supply and demand. But the natural world was able to take a collective deep breath from the humans that put so much on it. You know, I've spent 30 plus years, 40 years, I guess now, working in environmental things. And I used to get into some serious debates with people about whether or not humans can cause any problems on the planet. And it's always the same old bullshit. Well, there's, you know, we could never, this planet's too big. We could never hurt it. Okay. Try taking a shit in the toilet for about 6 months and don't flush it and watch what happens. You know, I learned everything I needed to know about the environment in fifth grade. We had a terrarium. And if you didn't take care of what was going on in the terrarium and kept it clean and did the things that needed to be done to keep it in balance, everything in there died. We just live in a giant terrarium, but that's for another show. This is one that I had a little bit of a trouble with, kids. You know, I'm on board with all this stuff, but the way I see things sometimes, I guess it's a little cockeyed. 30 minutes of lifting weights, push-ups, or yard work weekly may cut your risk of death by 20%. So I clicked on this story just to dig in a little bit more. On one hand, this is fairly obvious to me. I mean, you should be doing that stuff anyway. Researchers in Japan discovered that 30 to 60 minutes per week of muscle-strengthening activities like yoga, lifting weights, gardening can reduce the risk of death from all causes by 10 to 20%. When combined with aerobic exercise such as running, cycling, or swimming, this benefit was seen to rise to the 40 percentiles. 16 studies were looked at for the analysis. They consisted of more than 500,000 healthy adults, so it's a good-sized population, being monitored for a period of at least 2 years. The age ranged from 18 to 97, and the monitoring period from 2 to 25 years. All-cause mortality was looked at separately from heart disease and cancer, both of which tended to fall between the 10 and 20% percentile. So to me, on one hand, obvious, yes, it's good to go do things and get outside. I just came back from a checkup at the VA. My COVID ass was sitting for too long 6 months ago, and I went in for a checkup, and my triglycerides were ridiculous, and my LDL was up, and you know, my blood pressure was up, and I'd gained some weight because I just sat. I didn't go out. I should have walked more. So had to reverse all that and turned it around and, you know, stopped doing the things that I was doing and got out and got moving more. And I got, everything dropped back where it was. Just kind of like the earth, right? You know, you pound on it, you pound on it, you pound out, the numbers go up. You take a break and pull back and restore some balance and things even out. The body is an amazing, amazing machine. But here's my only thought about this. I don't know if you can cut the risk of death by 20%. I mean, I get what they're saying, but there's a part of me that's like, well, that's a bold statement. You know, there's a lot of people that I've lost more people in the last 2.5 years. Some were from the COVID pandemic and others from different sources and different reasons. And I had one friend of mine that walked all the time. He worked out. He's not here. So he wouldn't be included in the study, obviously. But my point is, and this is where I'm going to leave all this today, because I've already rambled on enough, but I got out what I wanted to. First of all, go to the Good News Network when you need a break. There's great stuff there. It's www.goodnewsnetwork.org. And take a break from the headlines. This is a place where you're going to find a lot of lifelines. Number two, when I saw the headline about 20%, cutting the death rate by 20%, it's a reminder to me that tomorrow is not promised to me or you or anyone we love or care about. And we're seeing that play out. And we've all seen this play out in our lives. You could be here today and gone tomorrow. And that's the deal. It's also the deal that you have this time, and what you do with this time is really, really important. It's that ripple effect. What kind of ripple are you going to cause in the world? What concentric rings are you going to send out in this time? And it's easy to jump on the bandwagon and fall in line with, you know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda dance. But as it's been said, it's always later than we think. And since it's always later than we think, and tomorrow is promised to no one, might be about time to get on with the good stuff, if you get my drift. No matter what's going on in the headlines, stay focused, if at all possible, on the lifelines. Until next time, safe travels. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the subscribers as well. Adios.